Okay, motion to come back out of recess into regular session for public hearings?
Yes.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver?
Second.
Mr. Arlett, seconds. Question on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Yes, motion carried. Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I'll read the rules of procedure for the zoning hearings. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Mr. Lank will announce each application. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the P&Z hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you are required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand and state your name and home address before you make a statement. There is also a sign-up sheet. Please sign your name and address. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to Mr. Lank and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. The first hearing today is change of zone number 1767. Mr. Lank?
Yes, thank you. Change of zone number 1767 is the application of Adal M. Baguli to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a B1 neighborhood business district for a certain parcel of land lying in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 2.867 acres, more or less, for land lying south of U.S. Route 9, Lewis-Georgetown Highway, and 1,000 feet west of Road 282, Arabian Acres Road. 911 address is 28990 Lewis Georgetown Highway, Lewis. Tax map ID is District 334, map 10, parcel 31.05 and 31.06. The Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this application on March 26th of 2015. For the benefit of council, I have passed down copies of the survey of the property showing the two parcels and the existing residents on the site. During the public hearing, the commission was copied the same survey. We did receive comments from the Department of Transportation, also known as DLDOT, the Sussex Conservation District, the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division. The applicant was present with David Hackett, Esquire, and gave testimony. The attorney did provide suggested findings of fact for consideration. The commission was advised of the differences between the required property line setbacks from an AR1 district to a versus a B1 neighborhood business district. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to this application. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed this application. Now, Mr. Johnson stated he had some concerns about a previous application for the same site or adjacent site, which was denied, and suggested that staff research the property and provide minutes to the commission for review. On March 26th, the commission did Did defer action for further consideration. Asked the staff to provide a copy of the minutes of the commission for any previous application for this site. On April 9, the commission deferred action for further consideration again. On April 23rd, the commission discussed this application under old business. Mr. Johnson said he would move that the commission recommend denial of change of zone 1767 for Adele M. Bagoli for a change in zoning from AR1 to B1 based upon a record made during the public hearing for the following reasons. One, Mr. Johnson does not believe this site is appropriate for B1 zoning and the permitted uses that would allow in that zoning district, which includes banks, laundries, gas stations, restaurants, retail, shopping centers, and other uses. Two, the rezoning is incompatible with the surrounding area, which is all AR1, subject in some cases to limited conditional uses. While there is some commercial or business zoning in the area, it is all on the north side of Route 9. There is no commercial or business zoning on the south side of Route 9 in the vicinity of this parcel. As a result, rezoning the property to B1 would be inconsistent with the surrounding properties on the south side of Route 9. Three, Mr. Johnson does not believe that the applicant made an adequate record to support the change in zone. The applicant stated that he desires the B1 zoning because he currently lives on the property and would like to operate his business there. He has requested the additional property next to his house to be rezoned B1 without any real justification for the request. Because the location of the property does not support a B1 use and the applicant has not created an adequate record to justify the rezoning, it should be denied. Four, this property is part of a prior application that was also denied by the Planning and Zoning Commission and County Council for conditional use 1790. Many of the reasons for that denial still apply today. Five, the traffic that could be generated at this location after rezoning to B1 is not compatible with the existing roadways and traffic conditions on Route 9. And six, the application does not promote the health, safety, and general welfare of the neighborhood or community. Thereby, there was a motion and second carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that it be denied for those stated reasons, and that motion carried 5-0. To date, I've received no additional comments from any individual agency on this application.
Okay, any questions from council?
Do we have any of the information from that previous thing on our little machine here?
No.
I don't. Okay. Is there something you can pass out that?
I'll have to
look. Or just give us a synopsis of why that was.
I have to look, Mr. Cole.
Okay.
Because
it seems like that was a reason that they used.
I would suggest proceeding, and I can bring it up later.
All right.
Sure. Okay. So if there are no other questions from council, Mr. Hackett.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is David Hackett. I'm an attorney representing Adele Bagoli. Mr. Bagoli is applying for a change of zoning for his property from AR1 agricultural residential to B1 neighborhood business. As was indicated by Mr. Lank, the council recommended that the application be denied. And I will discuss those reasons for denial later. Mr. Bagoli is a local businessman who owns and operates a business called Colorwise and More, which is a custom painting and wall design business. There also does some closet organization and sells furnishings. The property is located on the south side of Lewis Georgetown Highway, which is, as you know, U.S. Route 9, approximately 1,000 feet from Road 282, which is Arabian Acres Road. The property consists of two lots having a total frontage of 300 feet on Route 9 and a depth of approximately 430 feet. There is a total area of 2,867, 2.867 acres for the property. The applicant's residence is located on the easternmost lot. There is a pole barn garage located behind the residence. The westerly lot is unimproved. The applicant understands that once B1 zoning is granted, he is permitted to use the property for the permitted purposes for that zoning. However, he initially proposes to develop the westerly lot, which is currently unimproved, to construct a 5,000 square foot building containing three retail store units. Mr. Begholi's plans to use one or more of these units for his business, and which would include a showroom as well as offices. These are permitted uses in B1. U.S. Route 9 is a major arterial roadway in Sussex County. The trend of development along U.S. Route 9 between Georgetown and Lewis has been a mix of business and commercial uses over the years. The trend has caused the subject site to be more appropriate for business and uses and less appropriate for residential use. This was the primary motivation for Mr. Bagrulli to apply for a change of zoning to B1. The most recent application for a change of zoning to B1 in the immediate area, or for property fronting on Route 9 between Lewis and Georgetown, is CZ number 1757. The commission heard the application on September 11th, 2014, and found that Route 9 is an appropriate location for B1 neighborhood business zoning. The commission also found that B1 neighborhood business zoning, which is designed to serve small areas in rural low density or medium density residential neighborhoods, is appropriate for this location. In the application for change of zone to B1, which is CZ1736, for property located on the north side of Route 9, 3,200 feet from the subject property, which was heard in October 10th, 2013, the commission found that the use is appropriate for a change of zone to B1, neighborhood business, because it is located on Route 9, which is appropriate for small businesses which are allowed under B1 zoning. The commission also found that B1 zoning is consistent with the orderly growth of the county. The facts in those applications are substantially the same as the facts here. The properties in the immediate areas of these properties were used for commercial and business purposes, just as they are here. The council adopted the findings of the commission and approved the applications. Contrary to its express findings in CZ number 1736 and CZ 1757, in its April 23rd decision recommending denial of Mr. Beckley's application, the commission stated that it believed the site is not appropriate for the permitted uses that are allowed in B1 zoning district. A B1 neighborhood business zoning, which is designed to serve small areas in rural low density or medium-density residential neighborhoods is appropriate for this location. The location is appropriate for B1 zoning because numerous properties in the immediate vicinity of the site are used for commercial and business purposes. Across the street is, right in front of the property, is the Moose Lodge. The Moose Lodge operates a bar and a restaurant in that facility. Next to the Moose Lodge is Beeman's Antique Gallery. And Business Supply Depot and Grizzly's Landscaping Supply. These properties are zoned C1. The next property to the west of is Millman's Appliances. And then there is Steele's Gun Shop. The next property located on the corner is located on the corner of Route 9 and Route 381, which is Joseph's Road, is also zoned C1. The commission in its decision stated that there is no commercial or business zoning on the south side of Route 9 in the vicinity of this parcel. Nevertheless, there are commercial and business uses located on the south side of Route 9. Immediately to the east of the subject property, across Stamper's Drive, is a large antique store. Proceeding west of the property along Route 9, there is a pet grooming and spa business. And then going further west on the corner of Route 9 and Route 281, or Joseph's Road, is located a sales office for Berica Homes. So there are business and commercial uses on the same side of the street, so to speak, as our property. Permitted uses in a B1 district are compatible with uses in C1 districts, and they are also compatible with the other business uses in the immediate vicinity of the site. The change in zoning will not adversely affect neighboring or adjacent properties or nearby communities. In its decision, the commission referred to a previous application, CU number 1790, that was denied by the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council, and found that many of the reasons for that denial still apply today. This application was an application made in 2007 for a conditional use for property which included the subject property. The property in that instance was approximately 6 acres. And that property had not yet been subdivided into the lots, which two of which are our property. The minutes for both the commission and the county council public hearings on this application show that the purpose of the application was to allow a conditional use for offices and warehousing. The application proposed over 50,000 square feet of office space and warehousing, and 182 parking spaces with six buildings on less than 6 acres. Due to the large scale of the project, the commission found that the application was not consistent with the character of the surrounding property. The uses of the surrounding property at the time were substantially the same as the uses are now. The commission found that a project of this size and nature would compound traffic on Route 9, which at the time was operating in an unacceptable level of service. The DLDOT report in the record at, at that time did not support this finding. Finally, the commission found that the a conditional use to operate small business offices and warehousing on a much smaller scale on property almost directly across Route 9 was denied for the same reasons in 2006. Minutes showed that there were four people present in opposition to the application. The County Council adopted the findings of Planning and Zoning to support the denial of the application. There are no similarities between the application in 2007 and the application before you today. Nor do the reasons for the denial still apply today. The 2007 application was denied primarily for two reasons, neither of which are applicable here. The 2007 application was denied because was denied due to the large scale of the project. And the commission found that the applicant application was not consistent with the character of the surrounding property, which, as I said earlier, was substantially the same as it is now. A project consisting of over 50,000 square feet of office space and warehousing and 182 parking lots could not be physically developed on this site. The 2007 application was denied because the commission found that a project of this size and nature would compound traffic on Route 9, which at the time was operating at an unacceptable level, according to the commission. On July 7, 2014, DLDOT, in its service level evaluation report for this application, found that the current level of service to be E on Route 9, and that level of service will not change as a result of the subject application. The change of zoning is consistent with the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan. The property is located in a rural low-density area. The proposed business development of the subject property is a permitted use in the area, as well as the B1 permitted uses. Site plans for any use of the property will be subject to review and approval of planning and zoning. So the scope of the project need not concern either council or planning and zoning. For the reasons stated here, and for the reasons stated in the commissioner's recommendations for CZ1736 and CZ1757, we would respectfully request that the council grant the application of Mr. Begoli for change of zoning to B1 neighborhood business. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You indicated when I spoke to you just prior that you did have some proposed findings. Have you handed those out?
Yes, I
have. Okay. Did you have any witnesses that you would like to call at this point?
I have Mr. Begoli here with me, who is prepared to answer any questions that the council would like to address.
Well, I'm wondering why he wasn't interested in a conditional use. He seems to know pretty much about what he wants to do. He'd maybe be able to do some of that and in that location. I don't know if it would be approved or not, but it's certainly one step down as far as using of the property. Has he thought about it?
Yes, he has thought about it. Well, he has thought about it, and we discussed it. That prior to filing the application for B1, he has not finalized his plans at this date, and so he wasn't really ready to go ahead with a conditional use. And we thought it would be more appropriate this time to go with a B1, which would, you know, give him considerable freedom as to how he can develop the property.
Are there any other questions from council?
You referenced three pieces of property on the same side of the road, a Berica Home Office and something, a couple other things. What are they zoned?
They are still zoned AR.
So they all have conditional use?
So they must have conditional uses. That would be the antique store, which I know has a conditional use, which is right next door to the property. The pet grooming and spa would have to have a conditional use, as well as the sales office for Berica Homes.
Thank you.
I would imagine that the Moose Lodge has a conditional use.
Yeah.
It's not located in the C1 zoning area, which is right next door to the Moose Lodge going west.
The question I would have on DelDOT, did you have any correspondence with DelDOT? Because when you go to a B1, they're going to have on the entrances, because of the wide range of uses, they may have demand, some real expensive improvements to be made versus, again, the conditional use when they know exactly if it's just going to be offices or something of this. They know that they can anticipate the traffic impact better because they have tables and stuff. So, I mean, is there any? I didn't see anything, Lawrence or Mr. Hackett, from DelDOT. Did this application get scrutiny with DelDOT at all?
It did, and DelDOT decided that there was not a need for
no comments, no recommendations.
Yeah, okay. No recommendations at this point.
If I can, the comments that came from DelDOT were July 17th of 2014. Mm-hmm. And just in quick summary, they make reference that our volume-based criteria for requiring a traffic impact study, and then references the code sections, or that a development generates more than 400 trips per day or 50 trips during a weekly peak hour. While it seems that the criteria could be met, we presently cannot predict the site's trip generation with enough accuracy to make a traffic impact study useful. And thus, we recommend that this rezoning application be considered without a traffic impact study and that a need for a traffic impact study be evaluated when a subdivision or land development plan is proposed. So if you got the rezoning and then he has a plan proposed to go to DelDOT and the county for approval for a site plan, DelDOT's going to review it based on the plan they submit and decide then if there's a traffic impact study necessary.
But then it's already approved. We can't you can't unring the bell at that point.
That's
right?
The normal comment that we get last year or so.
It seems a little backwards, but
yeah.
But that's the way it is, I guess. Okay. I was just concerned because I know just that entrance permits and entrances designed for a B1 and they don't know anything could be quite expensive versus a conditional use.
But isn't Route 9 one of our major arterial roads? I don't understand DelDOT.
Okay. Any other questions from council? Sorry. If not, is there anyone here today that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone here that would like to speak in favor? Seeing none, is there anyone here today that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter, and if it's council's desire, close the public record.
We'll close public hearing. It's okay with council. We'll close public record. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think the questions are for DelDOT, not for us.
Okay.
I'm satisfied. I got Mr. Cole. One suggestion maybe that we do see that planning and zoning had some reasons, and one, and I think you alluded to it, what on that side of the road there's been certain trend versus the other side, which there's a little bit of both on the other side. Desire to maybe defer for a week and see if anybody wants to go by and visit and revisit site. It was denied. I was here once before. It was denied once before. It's just been denied again. And is it something that, or if you're all ready to vote, it's fine with me. But I'm just thinking, is there any concern that you might want to look at it one more time?
I do.
Well, I would say, if I may, Mr. President, before we close the public record, I'm not against going over there, of course, while the public record is open. But at the same time, this is a question as it relates to B1 versus that of a conditional use. I mean, here it is a major artery, correct, in our area.
Yes,
Route 9 is a major artery. And whether or not there is a condition of use or not, up and down Route 9, you've got a kind of smorgasbord of homes and small businesses and alike. So, I mean, as things evolve and things change, one way or the other, I mean, obviously it's very relevant that a parcel along that roadway, perhaps it may not be the trend of sorts, but I'm just still wondering and questioning, and I have read these, the planning and zoning, of course, notes as it relates to their opinion and their recommendation, but I'm not so sure how that directly relates to this application and changing that of the zoning.
Well, the commission.
I'll respond to Mr. Arlett.
Mr. Arlett.
We'll just let you listen, Mr. Hackett. No, I. There was. They alluded to the traffic status of it, like it's a level E, and we all know, we've heard for years how bad the traffic is and the situation is on some of these arterial roads. A lot of times people say the county's part of the problem. So I think over the years we've used a conditional use because we can then, and DelDOT in particular, can look at a use and say, here's the traffic that's going to be generated. Now, when you look at the list of permitted uses in a B1 district, certain ones can generate different types of traffic, different traffic patterns, et cetera. So you can go from I'll use an example of a fast foods like a McDonald's or something like that could be there, which is a Wawa type or a Royal Farm type store, or a beauty salon, all fall into a B1. That's the movie thing. I mean, it's such a long list, and that's the dilemma, Rob, over the years we've faced in roads that have traffic concerns, and 26 Route 9 are cited time and time again every year. So, again, we don't want to be part of the problem, and sometimes we've used the conditional use to alleviate. In other words, give the applicants a lot of times what they want or what they need, but yet not open it wide open so that we could create a future problem. So that's if I'm not mistaken, I don't know, ever or anybody can. Pretty much it, isn't it, Laura? Sorry. Yeah, pretty much it.
Conditional use method gets specific for one use typically, or one series of uses, and it's a public hearing is held on that specific item, and it can be a condition placed on it. When you do a rezoning and get a rezoning for a neighborhood business, be it C1, CR1 for commercial use, then it's open to anything permitted in that district.
Right.
And there's a long list in each one of what's permitted.
Well, has the applicant had a chance to talk with DelDOT about a possible entrance design, or has he not gotten that?
We haven't gotten that far.
Uh-huh.
But I can tell you that this was not a consideration in the change of zoning applications that I mentioned here today.
Else from council?
I don't really believe it's going to bring up much more traffic, although it's going to be a traffic getting on and off the highway. That's the only thing I can see, because I doubt if, regardless who you put there for business, what kind of business you put there, that they're really going to bring traffic there. I think it's going to, he might bring traffic into that business and take it back, put it on the highway. But for increasing traffic overall, I don't see it coming.
Well, I guess that we would hope that it would increase traffic, but it's highly unlikely that there's going to be any change. People are not going to go out of their way to come to this business, no matter how good it is.
I know. I probably live 12 miles from it, but I think regardless what the business is, I doubt if I'd run down there for that reason. Right. Unless I was going by, I may pull in. I don't know what the business would be either.
Sure.
Because you're not very specific in that. So
right.
That creates a little bit of problem there for me.
Yeah. Charlotte?
I was just going to say, I mean, in the end, the request here is changing it out of a zone, and it's not specific to the applicant's business, correct?
That's
because
correct.
We're changing of a zone here. So in the end, the decision has to be made on the bigger picture, because he perhaps after one may or may not get an approval here, but if one does get approval, One could turn around and resell the property with that zoning, and some other business, some other owner could come in here and get what he wants, correct? Because of the zoning. So the bigger picture would be that, correct?
That's right.
As it relates to the actual zone change, per se. So I think that's the decision has to be made, not specific to the business, but because of the zone.
Right. We understand that, and that's why I indicated that we were just giving you an indication of what we plan to do. But we realize that once the zoning has been granted, then it's wide open.
I wonder what level it is, Mars.
Now, but keep in mind that in the previous, in the zoning applications, which I mentioned, the commission and the council has found that the properties along Route 9 are appropriate for B1 zoning.
In those, however, they were fact-specific. We looked at, the council looked at the facts that were presented on the record to
them. They did, but they made, in the one decision, they made this, the broad statement that properties along Route 9 are specifically appropriate for B1 zoning. So that would not be necessarily fact-specific.
Tier 4.
Yeah. Mr. President, may I ask one other question? And Mr. Lank, do we know how many, I think this was asked earlier, but up and down the Route 9 corridor in this general area, how many B1s exist? Not directly across the street, but in the general area of this of these two parcels, along up and down Route 9, which is a major thoroughroad road in our area here. How many B1s exist?
Good question. I don't know if I can answer that question, but
because therefore that could answer the question: is it appropriate or not?
We do know that two. Exist.
That could be another reason to defer a week and have Mr. Lank present us.
And I'm not against that. Yeah.
Okay. Let me make a. Can we make a motion?
It's a state level 4.
Certainly, Mr. Cole. Make a motion.
To defer. I mean, at this point, can we make a motion to defer?
Defer it.
Yes.
At this point, ever.
Yes, I think it'd be appropriate too, because Mr. Hackett just handed us his proposed findings of fact, and that would give us an opportunity to review those as well.
Good. Motion, Mr. Cole.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Deaver. And to defer change of zone 1767.
For one, and we can make it time specific, but I would like to have our staff give us, you know, in the area on, like Mr. Arlett's request, on what's B1 and CU in that, and C1 even in that.
I don't know if we could stretch it in.
Mrs. Deaver would like to have 2 weeks, she said.
Yeah, I don't know if we could work it in next week. We have a heavy schedule next week. I'm, you know, just saying, being practical.
Okay, I'll be practical.
Good for you.
We'll make.
No more than 2 weeks.
No more than 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole, second.
Second.
Mr. Arlett. To defer change of zone 1767 for 2 weeks to give council and our legal staff time to review the proposed findings and facts as presented by the applicant, and Mr. Lank time to review the question about the zonings of the area around there.
Clarification?
Yep.
You want the zoning? B1,
B1.
C1, and the conditional uses in the general area?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
And that it's in level 4.
What about non-conforming? I don't know if there are any.
We don't have those mapped.
Okay.
Any questions on the motion? No, ma'am.
Not just for, we're allowed for staff.
Just for what they're going to come back to us with. Yeah.
Not the public record.
It's not public record, just for us information.
Yeah.
Mr. President, if anything, at least to share with the applicant and the client or the representative here, to let them know they don't have to come back, right?
No, that's correct. It'll be under old business and it'll be just dealt with. Yeah, that's correct. The public hearing is over with, so there's nothing
to
comment on.
It would just be the vote. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Hackett.
CZ 1767 is deferred for 2 weeks to get answers back from Mr. Lank and review the proposed findings.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
The next hearings are change of zone number 1769 and conditional use number 2012. They will be heard together, but any votes would be taking place separately.
Now, for the benefit of the record, since we are hearing both applications together, I had to read both titles and give a report. The first one is change of zone number 1769, the application of Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. It's an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MR medium-density residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County. Parcel containing 36.98 acres, more or less, and land lying north of Route 1 Coastal Highway, north of Tulip Drive within Dutch Acre Subdivision, and being southeast of the railroad near Nassau. 911 address was not available. The tax map ID is District 335, Map 11, Parcels 55, 56, 59, and 59.01. Conditional use application number 2012, Ocean Atlantic Communities LLC, is an application to consider the conditional use of land in a MR medium density residential district for a mixed residential use with multifamily dwellings to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 37.26 acres, more or less, for land lying north of Route 1 Coastal Highway, north of Tulip Drive within Dutch Acre Subdivision, and southeast of Railroad near Nassau. 911 address not available. Tax map ID, District 335, Map 11, Parcel 55, 56, 59, and 59.01. I will note you'll see a difference in the acreage on those two applications. One is because there's a lot within Dutch Acres that is a portion of the application that's already zoned MR. So the zoning changes a quarter to a half acre difference from the conditional use application.
So what do we have on New Road for them? Does it come up to New Road?
No, it does not.
Does not. How far? No possible engine access there.
Okay. Not currently.
Either that or through that another like a
it would
community.
Have to be through another site.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
A difficult crossing a railroad and going out to New Road. Uh-huh. The other access would be from Old Orchard Road. But there is none of that at that location either.
Could be
possibly.
Old Orchard. Yeah.
Right. The application was filed on November 25th. Exhibits were provided. The council members all have copies of the exhibit book in front of them. Additional copies of comments were submitted on April 29th, which I'll pass mm-hmm. down for the members. My report shows what's in the exhibit booklet. The report runs from pages 4 of my report to page 16 of my report from the commission's record. We heard comments from the Sussex Conservation District, County Engineering Department. There were comments submitted by Jeff Green and Barbara Bone in reference to a traffic management study that was part of the record. There was an email from Sol Peltz on behalf of residents of the Village of Five Points in the record prior to the application. Preston Shell, Ben Gordy were present on behalf of Ocean Atlantic Communities LLC with James Fuqua Esquire of Fuqua Urey and Willard. And Zach Krauts, professional engineer, and DJ Hughes, professional engineer, both with Davis Bowen and Friedel Incorporated, all present and giving testimony. Mr. Fuqua provided and summarized proposed findings of fact for change of zone number 1769, which you will see on page 7 and 8, and then provided comments of findings of fact and condition of approval for conditional use number 2012. And those comments are included with 5 reasons and 15 conditions recommended and suggested by the applicants. They are on page 8 and 9. There were no parties present speaking in support of the application. Excuse me. There were 17 parties that spoke in opposition to the application. That some of the application's opponents, and there were submitted multiple letters in opposition and a petition containing 900 plus signatures in opposition. The applicant's representatives responded to the questions and concerns raised by the commission and some of the opponents. On March 26th, the commission discussed this application after the public hearings. On change of zone 1769, they did defer action for further consideration on March 26th of 2015. They also discussed conditional use 2012, and again, deferred action for further consideration. On April 9th, the commission discussed these applications under old business, both applications, and there was somewhat discussion between the members. Mr. Burton stated he was prepared to make a motion, but asked for additional comments from the other members that were present. On that date, Mr. Burton made a recommendation of approval for change of zone number 1769 with five reasons, and those are located on page 13 of the commission's report. That motion was by Mr. Burton and seconded by Mr. Smith and carried with 3-2 to forward this application for change of zone 1769 to the council with a recommendation that the application be approved for those five reasons stated. Reference to conditional use number 2012, Mr. Burton again made a motion for approval. That motion included 8 reasons and 19 conditions of approval in the recommendation. And those were reported on page 13 through page 16 of the commission's report before you. Mm-hmm. And in that case, there was a motion and seconded and carried with 3-2 to forward conditional use number 2012 to the Sussex County Council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. And that motion carried 3-2 also. I just provided you a copy of a little packet that was just submitted mm-hmm. on April 29th. There was also a voluminous 1,400-page report on the Hudson Pit, which is this site.
That's the Brownfield.
And that's the Brownfield report. And I just, Mrs. Deaver has one in front of her. I have one additional copy. Mm-hmm. Also received today, while I was in the morning session, a letter from the Site Investigation and Restoration Section of DENREC dated April 28th of 2015, and also some questions and answers regarding Housing for Older Persons Act of 1995. And I will quickly try to read. It's a 2-paragraph sentence or letter from the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control Division of Waste and Hazardous Substances. This is written to Mr. Christopher Hine of Environmental Alliance Incorporated. It's referencing the approval of the site-specific assessment and Brownfield investigation report for the Hudson Pit. The Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control Site Investigation and Restoration Section, also referred to as DENREC/SIRS, has reviewed the site-specific assessment and Brownfield investigation report for the Hudson Pit site. The previous comments from the DENREC SIRS were addressed satisfactorily. Therefore, DENREC/SIRS approves the site-specific assessment and the Brownfield investigation for the above site. The evaluation, your recommendation for remedial actions and agree with the majority of them. The final decision regarding necessary remedial action to protect human health, welfare, and the environment will be determined by DENREC/SIRS and will be stated in the proposed and final plans of remedial action. And that was signed by Catherine Durant, project manager.
I want to know before that. Okay. Excuse me.
That's what we have from DENREC to date.
How much distance do we require from old landfills and dumps before we build between that and homes? We have a buffer.
We have a buffer if it's a landfill, but a previous landfill that's non-conforming, there is none other than standard setbacks.
Well, what's an old borough pit that's had garbage put in it? Isn't that what it is?
It's up to whatever DENREC dictates. We don't have a specific.
They prescribe how close a house can be?
In that case, because the pit already exists. Now, we have a determination site plan approval, and they require specific regulations, mm-hmm. and we honor those regulations specifically.
Mr. Lank, had you finished your report?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Are there any other questions from council? If not, Mr. Fuqua.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I represent the applicant, Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. As you know, there are two related applications before you, a change of zone application to rezone land from AR1 to MR, and a second application, which is a conditional use application for 147 mixed-use residential dwellings. With your permission, we're going to present all of our presentation in one hearing and then incorporate that as the record for the second hearing.
Yes.
I do want to state that I do have a lot of information to present. I want to assure the council that I'm not being paid by the word, all right? I just need to cover a lot of material. So I'm going to try to move as quickly and efficiently as I can through this material.
I know once you get started, you don't want to be interrupted.
I was told to limit you to 5 minutes.
Could you just tell me how many homes would be built under AR1?
Is that a question?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you would take the acreage and you'd multiply it by two.
Well, there's a lot of matters.
Could you do the math?
There's a lot of matters.
I'd suggest it might be better if I present my
setbacks
information.
Setbacks and whatnot. Okay.
Go ahead and present your case.
Right.
Thank you. As I said, we're going to present everything in this one hearing. With me is Preston Schell and Ben Gordy on behalf of the applicant, Zach Crouch and DJ Hughes from Davis Bowen and Friedel, and Joe Rossi from Environmental Alliance, Inc. As Lawrence stated, there was an exhibit book that was submitted and also a smaller exhibit packet that was submitted that you should have copies of both of those. And I'll be referring to that in my presentation. These applications involve a 36.98-acre parcel of land. It's located just off of Route 1, approximately behind St. Jude the Apostle Catholic Church on Route 1. So just north of Five Points, and I'm sure you're familiar with where it is. The board, of course, shows the location of our site. The property will have access from Route 1 by way of Tulip Drive. Tulip Drive right here. This is the St. Jude's Church right there. Tulip Drive is a public state-maintained street. Tulip Drive will be extended from the point where it now turns into Dutch Acres, and a new extended roadway will provide access to the site. So right here is the turn into Dutch Acres, and Tulip Drive will be extended onto our property.
But it's not state. It's not a state road.
It's a state road.
It is state road. Okay, gotcha.
The property is bordered on the south by the rear of 14 lots in Dutch Acres. That's right along here. The east of the site, over here, is the villages of Five Points. That's a mixed-use development of 586 residential units with a central commercial section. To the northeast of the site is the Atlantic Concrete Plant. That's a non-conforming commercial industrial use. The entire northern boundary of the site along here borders the Penn Central Railroad tracks and right-of-way. And then to the west, over in this direction, a portion of the property borders the reserves of Nassau Condominium, and the rest of the property borders the Terramino Villas of Lewis Condominiums. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of history to this site that is relevant to our applications. And since only Mr. Cole was on the council at the time of that prior application, I want to kind of summarize what occurred in the past. In 2005, the same parcel was approved as a conditional use for 152 multifamily units by the county council. That application was filed by Rubino Sanibel Village, LLC. I represented the applicant in that matter, so I'm very familiar with that application and with this site. That application had two very significant differences from the application before you today. The first is that the original application was designed with an entrance from Old Orchard Road. Mm-hmm. And that entrance would be the entrance to the Atlantic Concrete facility,
which again, just for reference, actually is down here. The entrance road basically would, again, enter at the concrete plant and run over 1,000 feet to the proposed development. After the planning and zoning hearing, the Planning and Zoning Commission actually recommended denial on that application. Mr. Wheatley made the motion to deny it, and his motion was based on concerns over potential hazards of passenger vehicles sharing the entrance with large, heavy cement mixing trucks, which, of course, entered and exited the Atlantic Concrete facility on a regular basis. That original applicant worked on addressing that concern, and the County Council did approve the project with a condition to address the Commission's concern. That condition required a private traffic signal that would be located on that access road that would control and stop traffic whenever a commercial vehicle was entering or leaving the concrete plant. And for your reference, minutes of the planning and zoning hearing, the planning and zoning recommendation, and the County Council decision are Exhibit D and E of that smaller exhibit packet that I submitted. Now, that approved development was not built. The conditional use expired. But what is clear from those decisions of both the Planning Commission and the County Council was objections to the use of the Atlantic Concrete entrance. And even at the County Council approval, the condition requiring the traffic signal indicated that if the applicant could locate an alternative entrance, then that condition wouldn't have to be, or would be waived. And my point being is that both Planning Commission and County Council recognize that a different access point to this property was preferred. So the first significant difference in today's application is that the entrance, as I stated, will be from Route 1 by way of Tulip Drive. And again, Tulip Drive is a state-maintained public road, and that will be extended to our property. I do also want to point out that 30 feet of the right-of-way of Tulip Drive, the width, is actually part of our property. When the original owner did Dutch Acres, he dedicated an easement for public use, but actually still owns 30 feet of the roadbed. So if you'll see the just the perimeter of our property, you can see that it includes actually a portion of that road. So the owner of our property, the applicant, will be the owner of 30 feet of that road. That will be the only access to the development, other than the Atlantic Concrete Road would be available for emergency purposes in a very unusual situation. And also, it's proposed that the Atlantic Concrete entrance would be the construction entrance to the site. So construction vehicles will not be coming in Tulip Drive. They'll be coming in on the concrete plant road. The second significant difference in our application from the previous application that was approved is that this application will, or this development will be an age-restricted over 55 community. Now, the main characteristics of an age-restricted community are that the, well, number one, obviously there's little or no impact on the school district in terms of students, other than the payment of school taxes or school costs through the county real estate taxes. The homes are generally designed with the master bedrooms on the first floor, and the communities are generally quieter with less hustle and bustle. And most importantly, over 55 communities have significantly less traffic than non-age-restricted developments. Now, that's a fact documented by the Trip Generation Manual published by the Institute of Transportation Engineers, or ITE as it's referred to, and that is the manual that is used by DelDOT and generally recognized as the source of traffic information. DelDOT notes on their approval letter, this is the approval of the TIS letter, it's tab 9 in the large exhibit book. It's dated February 4th, 2015. It says our proposed over 55 community, as compared to the development previously approved by the county, results in lower traffic volumes and lessened impacts. So the second significant difference between this and what was previously approved is that this has less traffic impact than what was approved in 2005. As to the actual traffic impact, there was a traffic impact study, or TIS, performed by Davis, Bowen, and Friedel that was reviewed by and approved by DLDOT. As I said, DLDOT's approval letter is in tab 9 of the exhibit book. The TIS studied the Route 1 Tulip Drive intersection and the proposed new intersection of Tulip Drive and where it would be extended to our site. Based on that TIS, DLDOT will require improvements to Route 1 intersection by extending the Delaware Route 1 turning lanes and also the erection of a stop sign to control the Tulip Drive intersection. As part of the TIS, DLDOT did require what they call a traffic signal justification study for the Route 1 intersection. DLDOT's report notes that the existing intersection currently has signal equipment, but it operates in a yellow flashing mode, except during church services when the signal is manually controlled by the Delaware State Police. So when there's an event there or when Mass is there on Saturday night or Sunday, the state police come out and actually control that intersection. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, it's just a flashing yellow signal. And
they're not offering to put up a light, a traffic light. Is that right? Did I understand what you said?
You're getting ahead of me, Mrs. D.
Oh, I thought I heard you say that.
No, nope, I didn't say that.
Oh, well, there you go.
The DLDOT said their study did not justify a fully operational traffic light.
Did not.
The signal justification study, again, this is what DLDOT required, concluded that traffic volumes at the intersection for both the existing and the proposed conditions with our development do not meet the necessary warrants for converting the signal to a full stop-and-go mode. Additionally, DLDOT, on their own, had McCormick and Taylor, who are the DLDOT consulting engineers that DLDOT use, they had them do a separate analysis, and they concurred that a fully operational traffic signal was not warranted under DLDOT's standards at that location at this time. Mm-hmm. So, as determined by DLDOT, the existing Route 1 Tulip Drive intersection would continue to operate in the exact same manner that it does now, and unless that is changed by DLDOT, and only DLDOT has the final say on those types of decisions. In addition to the road improvements, the applicant has offered, as requested by DLDOT, to dedicate a 5-foot-wide easement along the entire length of the Penn Central Railroad right-of-way. And that's going to be part of a proposed future Lewis-Georgetown pedestrian bike trail. And the applicant has included that in the site design. And in addition, has also included a public parking lot. So users of that future trail would be able to access that parking lot through our development and access the trail through that. And I think, as you know, the trails that have been done in Sussex County over on the east side have been very popular, very successful, and actually are a great compliment to the state of Delaware that they did those over there. And hopefully this will be the next extension of that. So the area I'm referring to, it would be right along here, the railroad tracks, and right here, if you have a plan up there, that's the parking lot that's referred to. Now again, that would be a public parking lot. As to other aspects of the proposed development, water for domestic use and fire protection will be provided by Tidewater Utilities, Inc. As you know, they're a public water company. The parcel is located in the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. The system design assumption of the County Engineering Department for this site is a maximum of 4 units per acre. The county engineer indicates that wastewater capacity is available in the system for the development, and our proposal is consistent with the county engineer's comments. The parcel is in the Fire Protection Service area of the Lewis Fire Department. Electric will be provided by Delmarva Power. There are no known endangered species or threatened species listed on federal or state records on the site, nor are there any listed historic or cultural resources located on the site. A wetland delineation was performed by Watershed Echo, Inc. They identified 4.51 acres of federal wetlands, federal non-tidal wetlands on the site. The delineation was submitted to and reviewed by the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Army Corps did issue a preliminary jurisdictional determination on February 4th of this year, and that is tab 7 of the large book. The development will also conform to the requirements of the source water protection regulations of the county, and the stormwater management design will conform to the regulations adopted on January 1st, 2014. This will comply with the new regulations, which I know you were discussing this morning.
Yes, I heard that.
Now, another unusual aspect of this is that a portion of the site was used in the past as a borrow pit, and subsequently, as often happens, was backfilled at a later date with stumps, logs, and construction debris. A very detailed site evaluation was done by Environmental Alliance, Inc. to determine the nature and extent of the current condition of the site and what remedial measures would be needed to be done to bring the property into compliance with DENREC standards. And Mr. Lank referred to copies of that, and you can see it's a rather large analysis that was done. The site actually was entered into DENREC's brownfield program in January 2014. And this doesn't come up often in Sussex County because it's normally something that's more geared toward Newcastle County. But the brownfield program has been in place in Delaware since 2004. The program is administered by DNREC. It encourages potential purchasers of land to enter into the program and perform site evaluations and propose a remedial cleanup plan prior to taking ownership for sites that are deemed to be qualified for this brownfield designation. In this case, that site evaluation has been done. It's been reviewed by DENREC, and as Mr. Lank stated, there's a letter dated April 28th of 2015 from the project manager of DENREC's site investigation and restoration section approving the site-specific assessment and brownfield investigation report that was prepared by Environmental Alliance, Inc. DENREC will now issue proposed and final plans of remedial action, which will be implemented and paid for by the developer, by the applicant. And that will be done as part of the site plan construction, and that is done under the authority and supervision of DNREC. So as a result of our proposal, this long-abandoned pit will be cleaned up per DLDOT requirements and put into an appropriate use in accordance with the county's comprehensive plan. I did want to mention that there's a similar situation, or there was a similar situation on the east side of Route 1, approximately behind where Grottos is, which I think you're all familiar with. There's a development there, the Arbors of Cottagedale. That was a remediated old dump known as the Jackson Pit, and you can see that that was quite an improvement to that site, had public benefit, and that was probably a worse situation than we have. Now, switching into the legal aspects of this, specifically, we are requesting a rezoning from AR1 to MR, medium density residential, and a conditional use for an age-restricted community of 147 condominium units. And that would be comprised of 43 single-family units, 46 duplex units, and 58 townhouse condominium units. In addition, the development would have recreational amenities consisting of a clubhouse, a swimming pool, playground, and then, as I said, the trail dedication and the trail parking lot. Now, as to the legal basis supporting our application, Under the Delaware Strategies for State Policies and Spending, the site is located in an investment level one. Investment level one are areas that the state considers already developed in an urban or suburban fashion where infrastructure exists or is readily available and where future redevelopment or infill projects are expected and encouraged by state policy. Be perfectly honest with you, this is the first time I've ever had an investment level one. They're not that common. This is where the state, that's the highest priority where development should occur. So under the investment level one designation, the state indicates that this is the most appropriate area for development. So our proposed development is fully in accordance with the state strategies for state policies and spending. As to the Sussex County Comprehensive Development Plan, this smaller packet, that is Exhibit B in there that I want to refer to, and this is the, well, I'll refer to it in a second. The parcel is located in the environmentally sensitive development area. As you know, that is one of the growth areas designated in the plan. Single-family units, townhouse units, and multifamily units are recognized as appropriate by the plan. The environmentally sensitive development area is considered an overlay area to the underlying zoning district, which we are requesting to be MR medium density. Central water and central sewer or county sewer are strongly encouraged by the plan, and as I've already stated, our proposed development will have both of those. The parcel's location in the growth zone is very important because a proposed change of zone or conditional use must be in conformity with the comprehensive plan's future land use map. And that is the, under Exhibit B, that is the map that I was referring to. This is the future land use map for our area. Our site in the booklet you have, I've kind of outlined in yellow. And you can see it is in an area designated as the environmentally sensitive growth area. And that, again, is the crosshatch on that. More importantly, I think you'll note that our site is actually an island surrounded by the mixed residential growth zone, which is the tan, and the highway commercial growth zone, which is the red. So we're totally surrounded. We're in a growth zone and totally surrounded by two other growth zones. So our proposed use is fully in accordance with the comprehensive plan and the future land use map. As to the proposed MR zoning and conditional use, the proposed 147-unit development is consistent with the purposes of the MR zone. The purpose of the MR zone is to provide for medium-density residential development in areas which are or are expected to be general urban in character and where public sewer and water may or may not be available at the time of construction. And again, as I've stated, our location is an area that already is urban in character. It already has county sewer available. It already has public water available. The MR zoning and the conditional uses are appropriate for this location. The requested MR zoning is also consistent with the current zoning in the area. If you refer to Exhibit C of my packet, that is the zoning map for this area. Again, I've highlighted our site in yellow on this map, and I think you can see all of the land surrounding our property is either MR, that would be the orange, or C1, which is the red. And the only exception to that is the triangle of AR zoned land right there. And as you know, that is the Atlantic Concrete property, which although it's zoned AR1, is in reality a non-conforming commercial industrial use. So our proposed use for a mixed development of single-family, duplex, and townhouse condominium units is also consistent with the existing development in the area. I mentioned the developments around us to the south. As I said, is Dutch Acres. We border the rear of 14 of those lots. Dutch Acres is a 40-lot residential subdivision. To the east is the villages of Five Points. That consists of 586 mixed-use residential structures and a five-acre town center business area. The western boundary of our property is the reserves of Nassau Condominium. That is a townhouse condominium project. We don't have a lot of connection to that, but it does border our property. That, again, is a townhouse condominium project, and that actually has a density of 10.2 units of the acre. The Terramino Villas of Lewis, which, again, are along Tulip Drive right here, that also is a townhouse condominium development, and that has a density of 6.6 units of the acre. So our proposed mixed-use residential community is consistent with both the existing zoning in the area and with the existing uses surrounding our property. Now, on occasion, there are situations where a zoning request is referred to as infill zoning. And I would submit to you that our applications are a textbook example of infill rezoning, where our property is basically the donut hole surrounded by the MR-zoned and commercial-zoned donut. So in summary, from a legal basis, our proposal is in accordance with the state strategies. It's in accordance with the Sussex County Comp Plan, and it's also in accordance with the purposes of the MR zoning and the conditional use for our stated use. Now, since the time of our planning and zoning hearing, we've received input, of course, from the Planning Commission, and particularly Mr. Johnson was very concerned with that there were no sidewalks proposed in the development, which we'll be addressing. And Mr. Schell's also discussed the site plan with representatives of Dutch Acres, and also at the Planning Commission there were representatives of the villages of Five Points. So based on the questions that were raised, the original site plan has been revised to some extent to address some of those concerns. And I'm going to turn our presentation over to Zach Crouch to review the revised site plan, to explain what modifications have been done with it. Mm-hmm. As I said, they're modifications which were requested by our neighbors. And Mr. Crouch, with that, if you would.
So you're going to tell us what modifications were changed or had made after that meeting? Okay. All right.
Good afternoon. For the record, Zach Crouch, the Davis Bowen and Fidel. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Delaware. I'm going to walk you through the site plan. And as I walk through the site plan, I'm going to kind of refer to the changes that were made based on the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, as well as meeting with the residents out at Dutch Acres. Fuquay stated, I mean, we have 147 mixed use, which consists of 43 single families, 46 duplexes, and 58 townhouses. And as you enter the property from Tulip Drive, there's a road connection that's going to extend Tulip Drive and be interior to the subdivision itself. The single families are on the south side of the branch. Will all be single-family houses. The duplexes and the townhouses, along with some single families, would be on the north side of the branch. Sidewalk will be extended from Tulip Drive to the interior intersection across the branch. As part of the Planning Commission and presentation of that, what the purpose of not providing sidewalks is that we're actually making the roads wider. Sussex County requirements for typical streets interior are 24 feet from back of curb to back of curb. All the streets within this subdivision are going to be 30 feet wide. That way we can designate a pedestrian path on the road to be used for that for that purpose. Being that this is age restricted, a lot of, you know, majority of everyone that walks and runs likes to walk on or run on asphalt just because it's easier on the joints or whatnot instead of sidewalk. So we figured that would be a better use for this type of development than sidewalks. So there would, you know, there's six additional feet that would be required within the subdivision itself as far as the pavement. As Mr. Fuqua stated, wetlands delineation was done. As we enter into the development, there's two wetlands crossings. There again, minimum impact, nationwide permit. It's pretty much a process that you have to go through. We are providing a 20-foot buffer from all the wetlands, which is a voluntary buffer. Federal wetlands, 404 wetlands, it's not a requirement to provide a buffer, but a minimum of 20 feet. In some areas, there's 50 to 60 to 70, 75 feet as you work along the branch.
That's too steep, isn't it?
Excuse me?
It's pretty steep there, isn't it? Yeah.
There's also a 50-foot setback from the terminal screen for county, which we're showing on here, that we're meeting that requirement as well. There's going to be four bioretention areas for stormwater management, so there will be no wet ponds located throughout the, you know, throughout the north portion of the site. And on the south portion of it, there would be bioswales and small bioretention areas to take care of the stormwater management on the south side. There would be emergency access near the Atlanta concrete plant. There again, that would be restricted only just for emergency purposes. At the Planning Commission meeting, there are some concerns, recommendations from the villages of Five Points of providing a 20-foot buffer and also eliminating a connection between the villages of Five Points and the public parking area, in which, per this plan, we extended the 20-foot buffer between the road and the villages of Five Points, and we also removed the pedestrian access from the villages of Five Points to the public parking. There's a 20-foot buffer that basically extends around the perimeter. There is three lots that, lots, I guess, one, two, and three, where the road is and how it really is pretty steep in this area. We're not going to be able to maintain the 20 feet, but it'd be between 10 and 12 feet. But the same type of landscaping buffer that is shown on the plans that's presented in front of you, which is, I think, PL3.
Can I ask you a question? What are the sources of water that go into that, whatever, that gulch or gully or whatever you call it, creek or stream or whatever? I understand when there's storms that the water comes up over the top of it, you know, when there's like a heavy storm. But I'm wondering what the source is. Is it off the road? Where is it off of?
Yeah. Well, one source is all these ponds in the villages of Five Points.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so they drain into that?
A watershed that drains that way.
All going that way. Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the soil is very soft all around there, so I don't know. Anyway, leave it to you.
As Mr. Fuqua stated, centrally located, there's a clubhouse, pool, and a tot lot. The one planning commission we had is a playground, but it's just a tot lot. And one of the questions came up, why do you have a tot lot if it's age restricted? Well, the grandkids come down, you need something for them to do. So we're just providing a small tot lot so that, you know, centrally located, so they would have something to do. We are showing parking spaces throughout the land plan itself. After meeting with the residents, there were some concerns about the two parking spots that are on the south side of the branch. And at the time when we submitted this to council, we did not move these. But when Mr. Fuqua submits some additional conditions based on that meeting, these are going to be removed or turned the other way so they do not, you know, shine into the back of houses. So it's these two areas here. So one way or the other, we're either going to face that way or we're going to incorporate and just have additional parking for the single families up here. So
where they had woods, they're not going to have cars? This is the Dutch Acres I'm talking about.
These two parking areas here, there's four parking spots, five parking
spots.
There
will be.
And again, it was just for overflow parking.
Uh-huh.
Instead of them being directed towards the back of these lots here, we're either going to face them that way or just include some additional parking for these single families. So, you know, cars don't shine lights in there if they park.
Okay, great.
Residents will be able to park along the road, correct?
There's no parking on the road for the Sussex County streets requirements. Whether they do or not, but they're not supposed to. I mean, that's how come you provide the required two parking spots per building.
But these are private roads, obviously. Yes,
private roads.
Sorry.
Yeah, there's just a couple of other things that were brought up meeting with residents that we did walk this whole area with them, and there were some concerns about, and you know, there is some big trees that are out here. So in design, we're actually going to, you know, send our surveyors out there to pick up some of these big trees and try to maneuver the road to try to save some of these big trees that are in the back of some of these residents. You know, just like I told them, I'm going to tell you, I couldn't make any promises just because there's wetlands here and there's a buffer here. But the one particular tree, there seems like there is some room to move the road closer so that we could keep that big tree. So, but there again, that's the couple of things that we went over in reference to, also in reference to the single family houses that are, they're at the corner of Villages of Five Points, Dutch Acres, and our corner parcel where we showed them where the 20-foot buffer was going to be located, which would be planted based on the landscape requirements that are part of the plan.
20-foot around the water, non-tidal waters, what you're saying?
No,
around the property.
20-foot buffer, that all? 20-foot? Yeah, that's going to ruin a Dutch Acres. I'm sorry, but that's the only cool air they have back there in the woods. Air right on route, almost right on Route 1. I would think that you would have to have, you want to have a very dense buffer.
If you refer to PL3 on the plan,
yeah,
I think it's a very dense.
Is it? All right, I'll take a look at that.
As Mr. Fuseway stated, the project does fall within the source water protection for Chapter 89, and the project itself needs to be within 35% impervious area. We're below that requirement, so no additional mitigation is required. And just to cover the stormwater management, we will be doing five retention areas, which are they're not going to be ponds, they're not going to be wet ponds. They're going to be designed with certain material and plantings so that everything's filtered through and then discharged into the branch, which as of right now, there's no stormwater management out there that exists today, and we have an existing brownfield that is going to be cleaned up part of the site. So with that said, all right, I'm going to turn over to DJ Hughes to kind of go over some of the traffic.
Can I get a quick question before you step down? The you brought up sidewalks. There originally there were no sidewalks. Now there is just a little bit of sidewalks. Do lack of sidewalks configure into your stormwater plans, your management?
Well, let me answer the first part of your question. At Planning Commission, we always had 30-foot.
30-foot what?
30-foot wide roads.
Okay, I know, but you got to have roads to get people around. But
I understand that, but what I'm saying before, that cross-section has not changed, okay?
You got a 30-foot road.
So if we, as far as the difference between stormwater management of sidewalks and not sidewalks, impervious areas, impervious area, either it's 30-foot wide or it's 24-foot wide.
Okay.
So if it's 24-foot wide, which is the county standards, then we put sidewalk there, you're still getting 5 feet one way or the other. Mm-hmm. So it's either we make the road smaller and per the county standards and provide a 5-foot sidewalk outside.
And the county standard is what?
24-foot wide.
24
actually foot a 20-foot paved surface, 2 foot of curbing on both sides, mm-hmm. which is 24 feet from back of curb to back of curb.
So you're still saying that most of the community is still not going to have sidewalks?
But
correct? It just goes
roads,
to that first intersection.
Single family.
All the roads have 30 feet wide. And there again.
Well, I understand all, but I'm concerned.
Sidewalk.
I think sidewalks are an asset to a community because people can walk on them and get out of traffic. But you gave us the excuse that joggers.
I'm not giving you an excuse, Mr. Cole. I'm just saying
joggers prefer them.
Well, if you talk to anyone that actually.
Well, I know he doesn't jog. He ought to sit down.
I have a comment on this topic.
Please clear me up here.
Yeah. Ocean Atlantic communities.
Why no sidewalks and why?
Because if you drive through Independence right now, which is our other active.
If you would please
community.
State your name and who you are and for
the
record,
who the heck is he?
If you don't mind.
Yeah, I just said Preston Shell from Ocean Atlantic Communities.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks. they walk in the street.
I know,
but when they
don't have a sidewalk, they've got to walk in the
street. No, we have sidewalks in Independence.
And they still walk
on the
street?
They still walk on the street. Oh, they say that and we also have an asphalt trail, but they'll walk in the street and they'll use the trail. They will not walk on the sidewalks. They complain about the grade change. They don't like the slant of the sidewalk, and they don't like the grade change when it hits driveways. And they say it's too hard on their knees. So we put a sidewalk in that no one uses. And drive through. Like, if you don't trust me, drive through, and if you see someone walking, note where they are, whether they're on the street or what.
So, sidewalk survey?
So I'm happy to include sidewalks if you guys want to put them in, but my homeowners would be better off if we extended the length of the roadway, because that's where they want to walk.
So there's a space for walking, and it's
correct.
Designated?
Huh. We could stripe it. I don't think you can stripe it and necessarily say sidewalk, but you can stripe it and say bike lane, and that's where essentially they walk.
It's okay.
Designated for pedestrian use.
Right. It would be obvious by the time you're finished with it. Okay.
I'm only 40 and I like asphalt, but I'm a little heavy. But I like asphalt better than concrete. I don't know if you guys jog or whatever, but.
Mike does. The rest of us don't.
I won't. Not jog.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Cole, you finished with me?
Right now. Finished with you, unless Jones got more good questions
no, I'm
for you.
I picked on you pretty good.
All right, I appreciate
all
that.
All right, lots of trees, please.
Good afternoon. My name is DJ Hughes. I work for Davis Bone and Friedel, professional engineer, licensed in Delaware, and I did the traffic impact study, and for what it's worth, I'm also a Cape and Lopin Viking and a Delaware Fighting Blue Hen. The TIS, we met with DLDOT in August of 2014, and we scoped the TIS per their regulations. The previous August in 2013, they had done counts during a weekday based on, I believe, residents' requests for a signal justification study. They had determined at that time it wasn't warranted. We came in. We also did 2014 summer Saturday counts, and those were included in the TIS. Final TIS was submitted in November 2014. DLDOT responded via their TIS review consultant in February of 2015. They once again determined that a signal was not warranted at this time. There are some improvements that we will be required to do out at Route 1 and Tulip Drive, if I can walk over to the board. On Route 1 here, the right turn lane, as you can see, well, you probably can't see from there, but the right turn lane is a short right turn lane. It's only about, I think, 115 feet. It's going to be extended to the south on Route 1 to be a total of 460 feet. So you'll be able to get into that lane sooner now to get off of Route 1 if you're turning right on the Tulip Drive. Additionally, in the median here, there's a left turn lane. It's going to be extended to a total of 230 feet of full-width storage and 100-foot taper. But it won't come back to Nassau Road here. There was a concern a resident raised in the Planning and Zoning Commission
that there would, hearing that there would be a weave condition from this left out to the left into Tulip, but you won't be able to get into that left turn lane for Tulip Drive until after you enter Route 1 southbound.
But that's coming down off the ramp, if I understand it all.
Yeah, after you come down the bridge, the downgrade to the bridge, there's an existing left turn lane for Tulip Drive.
That's the problem. Too fast. I know. I've tried it. Getting in and out there.
Just so you're aware, I don't know if you noticed, but I believe it was last fall, they lowered the speed limit on southbound Route 1 to 45, I believe.
Our committee did that.
I didn't know you could change speed limits, though.
I could do that.
Wow.
Well, I told Pete Schwartzkopf.
Wow. But you can change a sign. It doesn't necessarily change the driver's speed. But
I know. Well, the police said it might not change anything, but we're trying because it's a bad place. And that we had Representative Schwartzkopf, he took care of that.
And it was previously noted that we are providing a 5-foot additional right-of-way for the trail and a parking area for the trail as well. And there are the sidewalks are mentioned. And as far as that, I think that's a lot of personal preference, but I will note that I'm a traffic engineer, and I've lived in two developments in my adult life. Neither one of them's had sidewalks. One of them in the town of Milton, and the other one's in Sussex County, River Rock Run. We don't have sidewalks. We have nice homes. People walk in the community, and people respect it. Some people have kids, and some people just like to walk. So that's my perspective on the sidewalks. For trip generation, we generate, as an age-restricted community, less than 700 trips per day. We generate 55 in the morning and 60 in the afternoon. So that's one trip or fewer per hour during peak times. On a Saturday, it would actually be 34 peak hour trips. That's about one every 2 minutes. And that's only 16 in and 18 out total. And most people, once you move to the area, I don't think that the residents are going to be traveling during the peak times, either when the church is in service. They'll most likely try to plan around that, or when Route 1 is peaking, typically between 10 and 3 on a summer Saturday. We have less units than the previously approved application, and the age restriction knocks down the traffic significantly more. Unless you guys have questions for me, that wraps up my portion.
Well, you talked about it being fewer units than the previously approved application, but there's a lot of new around there that wasn't there in the past, a lot of new housing around there. So it's making a big difference. But I understand what you're saying, but things have really changed over those years. So very busy over there.
Okay. Thank you.
As I stated, Jim Fuquay for the record. As I stated, the county has already previously approved this this parcel for a similar use. The difference is, again, a reduction in number of units, the relocation of the entrance road from what the county deemed to be an unsafe entrance to the Tulip Drive entrance, and the redesignation of this as a over 55 community, which by its nature has a significant less impact, both traffic and other factors. When the original development was approved, the County Council made several findings that are equally appropriate for this application. And I just want to tell you what the county said back then. This is Exhibit E of the small packet. In summary, the county noted this is in a growth zone. It's served by central water and county sewer. It's consistent with the comprehensive plan. It's consistent with the state strategies and state strategies map. It's consistent with development on adjoining properties, and that this will be a significant public benefit by the cleaning up of the pit site in a manner approved by DENREC. And as I said, those same findings equally apply to our applications. As I said, we have revised the site plan to address issues that were raised by representatives of the Village of Five Points and Dutch Acres and the concern Mr. Johnson of the Planning Commission expressed about sidewalks being needed. However, there were other objections raised by residents of the Terramino condominium project and the St. Jude the Apostle Catholic Church regarding the use of Tulip Drive, which they, of course, also use for access to their properties. And I expect representatives of both those parties will be speaking in a few minutes. And I do want to respond to the objections they raised previously at the Planning and Zoning meeting, and also suggest some questions you may want to ask them. Now, as to the Terramino condominium, Tulip Drive is a state-maintained public road. As I mentioned earlier, the applicant will actually own 30 feet of that road when they purchase this property.
Is the 30 feet maintained by the state, or is it just...
Yeah, it's maintained. It's part of the road right away.
Part of the roadway. Okay.
Right.
So they don't really... They pretty much have given up pretty much...
Yeah, there's a... Yeah, I mean, they own fee ownership, but it's subject to a public easement.
Okay.
Yeah. Narrow.
But it is certainly ironic that the Terramino's position is that the applicant shouldn't be allowed to use the road which they own the bed to and created the easement to, but they and other people should. That position is basically the same position that the neighbors who opposed the conditional use application that resulted in the Gibbons v. Sussex County Council Court of Chancery decision in 2005 had. And as the court stated in that decision, in this case, most of the arguments advanced by the opponents were ones that the opponents could have said about their own homes. Simply put, the opponents' desire to say this far, no further about their community is understandable, but is not a non-arbitrary reason to deny the Gibbons the same property rights that many among the opponents are themselves enjoying. And that is exactly the same situation. They are using this road, but they say no one else should be able to use it. It's a public road. It's basically the only safe access to our site. Also, the Terramino project contains 68 multifamily townhouse condominiums. It has a density of 6.6 units per acre. It uses one entrance off of Tulip Drive that provides access to Route 1. And basically, they want to deny our application for the exact same rights that they're enjoying. The opposition from St. Jude's Church is a bit more sensitive. As a general observation, I would not choose to put my client in an adversarial position with the church. Oh. Doesn't seem to have much future with that.
Oh.
And the applicant, I want to state the applicant and I respect the rights of the church and all the parishioners of St. Jude's to their opinion. And I also want to state, when I say the church, I'm not talking about the church. I'm talking about the pastor and the trustees of the church who actually make the decisions. In this situation, the church has chosen to organize opposition to our application. And by them entering into the land use decision-making world, their position is subject to review and analysis. And it's certainly the applicant's responsibility to respond to their objections. And with all due respect to the church and the parishioners, we are going to respond. The church basically coordinated the signing of the petition in opposition to our application, signed by over 900 people. The petition itself is pretty short. It basically says their opposition is, and I quote, "because presently traffic on Route 1 has a traffic overload," close quote. Now, two things about the petition I think are relevant. One is, if you review the petition, almost everyone who signed that petition do not live anywhere near Tulip Drive. Most of the folks that signed that, they come to St. Jude's for Mass on Saturday night or Sunday morning, or they participate in other church activities. And their use of Tulip Drive is very, very minimal. Most of the people are from the Lewis area or the Milton area or all over eastern Sussex County in that area. The second thing is that in you making a land use decision, a land use decision is not a popularity contest. The mere fact that 900 people or 9,000 people or no one oppose the zoning application is irrelevant. Zoning decisions are not based on popularity, and again, as the courts of Delaware has stated, and I quote, the law requires that local governments deal with specific land use decisions in a rational, non-arbitrary manner, guided by the legislative standards of general application. Now, those legislative standards are the state strategies document, the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, and the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance, which, as I've already presented, firmly support the approval of our application.
They're entitled to AR1 as well.
Well, we already are AR1.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, is that a question?
No, I'm just looking at the fact that I recognized, like what you're saying, it's already zoned AR1, and they have a right to develop it, is what I'm saying. But you're talking about higher density now.
Well, so. I'll tell you why higher density is appropriate.
Okay.
All right? Our site is surrounded by land zoned.
Oh, I've seen it.
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
Our land is surrounded by land zoned MR, medium density, or C1 commercial. Our piece is a textbook infill parcel in zoning language. The Villages of Five Points located next to us has a density of 3.2. The Terramino townhouse project has a density of 6.6. The Reserves of Nassau, again, which touch our property, has a density of 10.2. Our requested MR density of less than 4, we're about 3.9, is totally consistent with all the density around us.
I see what
the
you're
two
saying.
Units per acre would be out of character with the nature of our area. Our site is also served by county sewer. It will also be served by central water. It's in a growth zone under the comp plan, which is where the county council indicated development is supposed to go, at higher densities. The site plan specifically states single family, multifamily, and townhouses are appropriate use in the growth zone. The state strategy says this is investment level 1. That's where they want the higher density development. And from a land use point of view, I don't think you could find another piece of property more appropriate for MR zoning.
Well, I came in through Dutch Acres, and I don't think that's high density. Maybe it is, in your opinion, but it's a quiet and beautiful little community. And I see single family lots there. So, but that will connect up to your property.
Yeah, Dutch Acres is a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
It is single
yes.
family lots. It's 40 lots, and from my calculations, the density there is 3.2 units of the acre.
Is it 3.2?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you could have a subdivision too there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, my point being, the AR1 zoning would just be totally out of character with everything else in that area.
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
Is there going to be any special emphasis on building green because of this? It's so close to that. I guess it's like a little stream there. I call it the gut. I'm wondering because it's a lot of water. The soil in the developed community is very wet. I'm wondering, is the builder going to do anything about? Having more perviousness, in other words, building green to try to protect some of the stream there and that the water is there.
Well, I think Zach can probably answer that better than I can, but
again,
we have we're providing a 50-foot buffer from the stream.
Mm-hmm.
All right, providing buffers from the other developments.
Yes,
that's a 20-foot wooded buffer that will be planted. And maintained.
Mm-hmm.
The site itself, again, I understand the environmental impact, and I think the applicant in this case is someone with an existing history of development that I think is of high quality and done in an environmentally safe fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of all that, you are taking certainly a parcel of land that is less than desirable at this time, doing a remedial action to improve it environmentally significantly and then put it into useful functioning purpose in Sussex County and also have people paying taxes.
Is it safe to say the 50-foot buffer from the gut, or whatever you call it, because it's tidal and you went 50 feet?
Yeah, no, the gut is entitled. The county's buffer ordinance actually is from tidal or perennial flowing streams. All right, so this is non-tidal, but it is a stream, so a 50-foot buffer is provided.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Zach?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Very deep.
Mm-hmm. Let me find my place here.
You can jump to the end if you want.
I might repeat myself a little bit here, but as to the actual traffic impact, as required by the existing memorandum of understanding between Sussex County and the state of Delaware, any land use application has to be referred to DelDOT for review. That was done on this application. DelDOT determined that a TIS traffic impact study was required. DelDOT prepared the scoping instructions for the extent of that TIS. The TIS was performed by Davis Bone and Friedel. The TIS reviewed and approved the TIS. They've issued the letter stating what they're requiring us to do, and I mentioned that, constructing the site entrance per DelDOT instructions. That would be the site entrance on Tulip Drive, extending the turn lanes. And as I said, DelDOT had indicated at this point in time that a signalized intersection was not warranted. As to the impact of our proposed over 55 community, based on DelDOT's analysis, our project is not significant enough to even require them making that light into a fully functioning light. So our impact on Tulip Drive is minimal.
Why did they need a temporary trooper out there, just to get into Mass? I mean, I'm talking about the church. I mean,
technically, the church hired them people, I would say.
It's funny you should ask that.
Okay.
The reason is because when Mass is held on Saturday night or Sunday morning, mm-hmm. there are, and I'm being conservative estimate, there are 150 to 200 vehicles in the church parking lot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people attending church service.
Right.
From experience, I would say the vast majority of those people arrive there within 10 or 15 minutes before Mass, and the vast majority of those people leave there within 10 or 15 minutes after Mass.
Okay.
So that results in 120 to 200 vehicles or more on special occasions accessing Tulip Drive in a very, very short period of time. All right? That's why a police officer needs to be there.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I appreciate that. Yeah. Sure
now, in comparison to that, based on the trip generation estimates by DelDOT for our development, and this is what DJ Hughes was referring to, and I'm going to use the maximum peak hour trip generation. This is the busiest our project is. Okay, I'm not using the Saturday night. I'm not using the Sunday. They're lower. This is the most traffic we have. They estimate the that peak traffic to be 60 vehicle trips per hour, all right, which it's easy enough to figure out that that's approximately one trip per minute, all right? Now, even at our busiest time, we're basically averaging one trip per minute. The effect of that on the church when it's getting out is there is no effect.
No, I'm just saying that there's quite an accumulation once that's approved. You have lots of traffic coming in there, and that the entrance access is plain dangerous. You know?
Yeah, and again, so. DelDOT, you know, DelDOT is control of signals.
I know
we
that.
Can't do anything about that.
I know that.
As to the overload that's mentioned in the petition, as I said, Route 1 is a major arterial road in eastern Sussex County. It's used by most residents of eastern Sussex County almost every day. It's used by me. It's used by Mr. Cole. It's used by Mrs. Deaver.
How do I get into this? I'm just sitting here.
And it's also used by the parishioners of St. Jude's and the residents of Terramino. And I think trying to use that as a reason to deny the applicant the use of their property does have no basis. So ultimately what I'm saying is that petition to me is unsubstantiated and makes no practical reason, and basically is meaningless. I also want to mention the representatives of the church had several other objections, and I do want to address those. At the planning and zoning hearing, the business manager of the church expressed concerns that drivers would enter the church's entrance on Route 1 to gain access to Tulip Drive. And let me explain that. The church is here. Mm-hmm. Tulip Drive is here. But the church also has an entrance right there on Route 1.
Yeah.
That comes into their educational building over here. So basically what was stated was, this is very dangerous because people pull in here, scoot through this parking lot to get over to Tulip Drive. As I said, it was represented that it was creating a dangerous situation, and they were concerned with people in our development will be cutting through there to get to Tulip Drive. Now, I went up there, and I turned in there and drove through the church's parking lot, and I will say I did it very carefully and at a very slow speed to try to understand his concern and see if it made any sense to me, and I reached two conclusions. The first one is, why would anyone turn into a parking lot, navigate around the parking islands, and then turn and drive across the parking lot to access Tulip Drive, which they could just access by staying on Route 1 and turning at Tulip Drive? That just didn't make any logical sense to me. And the second thing is...
unless it was the heat of the summer and bumper-to-bumper traffic on Route 1, right. Possibly.
It's not backed up going north that way.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, right.
Quiet. Sorry.
I'm just throwing it out there.
He'll have to answer for this. He's a good Catholic boy. Oh. He'll answer to the...
Well, there you go.
Sure about good.
Proceed.
Okay, if the business manager actually believed that this was a dangerous situation, why aren't there any traffic calming improvements made there? In other words, there's normal traffic things you can put in, speed bumps, things of that nature. There's no stop sign in the parking lot. There's no sign saying no trespassing. There's no sign that says church use only or no thoroughfare, or even a sign that says caution children. So if this was actually a problem, why wouldn't the church have done something if it was actually a problem?
I'd do it now.
If it's a problem, they should do it.
Yeah.
But the fact is they control that.
That's right.
All right, it's not a reason to deny this. It's actually a bogus reason that was brought up in opposition to this. The church trustees also submitted a letter raising additional concerns that I want to mention. They're concerned about how the development sidewalks will affect St. Jude's. I think obviously, as you've seen, the sidewalks are internal. They don't have any effect on St. Jude's. They claim that our development does not meet federal environmental regulations. All I can tell you is that, number one, it will meet federal regulations, and number two, it's required to meet federal regulations. That's the law. We don't have any choice about that. They claim the 50-foot buffers are required from all tidal wetlands, and we are only providing 20-foot buffers. And I think that's just a misunderstanding of the wetland requirements. The 50-foot buffer is required from all tidal wetlands and perennial streams. We don't have any tidal wetlands. We do have a perennial stream. We do provide the 50-foot buffer. When it comes to federal wetlands, as you know, there are no buffers required from federal wetlands by federal law, state law, or county law. We are providing a voluntary 20-foot buffer at a minimum. So we exceed what's actually required. Also, the opponents, they were concerned of being notified of any revised site plan changes. They want to know about that. And again, just for the record, I want to state that today's hearing is on a change of zone and a conditional use. If this is approved, the applicant will have to go back to the Planning and Zoning Commission for preliminary and final site plan approval. They also will have to obtain all permits and other approvals from other regulatory agencies. And all the planning and zoning meetings are open to the public. They're public hearings. And anything we submit in terms of a site plan is available for inspection at the Planning and Zoning Office. All right, I'm about to wrap this up. Okay. The final point I want to address is the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation. Our applications did receive a recommendation of approval from the Planning Commission. And I believe that the reason stated by the commission for approval of change of zone 1769 and conditional use 2012 are substantial findings based on evidence submitted in the record, and they should be adopted by the county council. Mr. Johnson voted against the recommendation of approval, but his only stated reason in that record was that he thought the development should have sidewalks for pedestrian traffic. As I said, Zach's addressed that. We are providing pedestrian access within the development. On the conditional use, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended, I think it was 18 conditions. We believe those conditions, for the most part, are appropriate and should be adopted by you. I have one requested recommendation to change. Condition number N of the Planning and Zoning Commission's conditions was a short condition. It only addressed the hours of construction. Since that hearing, as I said, Mr. Schell has met with representatives of Dutch Acres. Several things were discussed. Several things were agreed to by Mr. Schell. And what I'm proposing to do is to delete condition N that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended and substitute in its place an amended or my proposed condition N. Mr. Moore, we'll hand those down to you. So again, these were the things that were discussed with the residents or some of the residents of Dutch Acres. I suggest that these be incorporated as that condition N, and the reason for that is to ensure the enforceability for the protection of the residents of Dutch Acres who were part of this discussion. Mm-hmm. For the benefit of the people who are here, I think I'm just going to read these quickly. I'll summarize them. One is the construction hours. This is basically what was agreed to by the residents of the Dutch Acres. It'd be 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, and nothing on Sunday. Second one was there'd be no vibratory rollers or tampers would be used during road construction on the west side of the wetlands adjacent to Dutch Acres. Zach already mentioned number three, that the overflow parking would be located so the headlights would be turned inward rather than outward, or it'd be relocated to the interior of the development. Four is there'd be a 20-foot forested buffer planted and maintained along the rear of the lots in Dutch Acres bordering the site, except for lots 1, 2, and 3, which shall receive similar plantings and the maximum buffer permissible considering the location of the project entrance. The reason it tapers off there is because of the location of the wetlands, and it squeezes on both sides, and that's why it has to be narrower there. That buffer would be planted within 6 months of commencement of site construction. It talks about the type of trees that would be planted together with appropriate fill and shrubbery in order to create the intent of a natural screen along the Dutch Acre lots. In addition, number five is that the developer shall support and assist the owners of the residents in Dutch Acres for requesting DelDOT approval for a two-way stop sign at the intersection of Tulip Drive and Slipper Shell Way, which is our entrance road. I might have used the wrong term with two-way stop sign. What I meant was both those roads would have a stop sign. So people coming down from Dutch Acres would stop. People coming out of our development would stop. Again, we can't do that. Only DelDOT can authorize that. If DelDOT does authorize that, the developer would be responsible for paying for that if that's approved within a 3-year period. We did put a termination date on these things if they're not determined by DelDOT. Number six is, again, the developer would assist Dutch Acres requesting DelDOT's approval of a cul-de-sac at the southern end of the residential section of Tulip Drive. And of course, that would be up to the owners in Dutch Acres if that's what they wanted to do, and ultimately it would be a decision by DelDOT as to whether they would approve that or not. And what that is DelDOT, Tulip Drive, you can
can see it loops around here and actually comes back up near Route 1. There are commercial uses up here. The residential area ends like back in here. Again, that if DelDOT would approve a cul-de-sac there, within a three-year period, the developer commits to pay the cost of that construction. And lastly, we've talked a lot about that light on Route 1. The developer basically will support and assist the owners of lots in Dutch Acres in requesting DelDOT's approval for a fully operational traffic signal at the northern intersection of Tulip Drive and Route 1. The developer agrees and commits the sum of up to $200,000 for the specific purpose of installation of a fully operational traffic signal at that intersection, again, for a three-year period of the date. And again, the developer is willing to commit that money to this, but the final say is DelDOT's. Nobody else has any control over that. It's purely a DelDOT decision. The last two are what I mentioned before. The construction entrance would be through the Atlantic Concrete property. And the last one is all homes located on the west side of Black Hawk Gut shall be single-family homes. So on the Dutch Acres side, all those homes will be single-family homes, not duplexes or townhomes. And again, for the record, I want to state that the applicant has voluntarily agreed to those conditions. A lot of those things involve off-site improvements that the council probably wouldn't have authority to require the developer to do. But I want to make it clear for the record, the applicant is voluntarily agreeing to those conditions and is specifically requesting that the county council would incorporate those conditions into your conditions. And as I said, I think the most logical way to do that is just substitute my proposed N for the existing N. Now, for all the reasons I've stated, we do request approval of the conditional use and the change of zone applications. That does conclude our presentation, other than any questions we may be able to answer.
Any questions?
Yes. This is the book you used when you went to TAC. This is what you took, basically.
Well, you don't go to TAC anymore.
You don't go to TAC anymore. Plus, did you go anywhere?
Well, yeah, you go to Plus. TAC, you just submit information.
Okay. And your conditions are in here, right? Everything's in here?
No.
No,
the conditions aren't in there.
Conditions aren't. Okay. The conditions are. Right, okay.
I got them right here.
Okay.
So it's clear, they're not the complete conditions. The conditions are planning and zoning recommended, and I'm asking that N be substituted for N.
Okay. Mm-hmm. With DelDOT, you basically made the presentation with all this information we've heard. Okay. Where in your conditions or in this book is there any reference to age-restricted community? You said it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, it's in the DelDOT letter.
It's in a letter. Now, wait a minute, but I'm concerned. If we approve what's in front of us, there's no age-restricted community required here.
Yes, there is.
Now, show me that. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
If you look at the conditions proposed by the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you look at the conditions proposed by the Planning Commission.
Okay, I've glanced at a bunch of this stuff, and there's a lot of it here, and I'm trying to find the word age-restricted as part of the... In other words, DelDOT said, you know, there wasn't a concern because of its age-restricted, and there's a lot of things that maybe some of the agencies looked at it differently because it's age-restricted.
It is in M of the conditions by planning zoning.
On where?
On the conditions. That was on page 15 of your package.
Nicole, there were two motions.
That's what planning and zoning approved.
On here. Right, that's right. I'm trying to figure out. I got all this paper.
Yeah.
M.
I'm okay. Is it in?
Okay. Okay.
M is in Mary.
It's in the DelDOT letter, too.
It is in the DelDOT letter. We represent the Planning Commission. We represent it to you. That would be a condition of
and that's approval. A condition that we can impose on,
yes.
On a committee. Right, okay. Okay, that's good. No, I was looking all over this stuff, and I was trying to find it.
Councilman Cole, page 15 in our packet.
I got it. Okay, I got it now. I was glancing at all these different things. In the MR zone, the MR zones are, 10,000-square-foot lots. Because of the configuration of this site, I dare say you couldn't get anywhere near, because of the wetlands and the impact of the gut and everything else, anywhere near the 147, you'd get over the AR density, but you probably wouldn't get to that maximum 4 units of the density because of the things. So there is a substantial difference by going to the RPC. Gives you that additional density and then the type of housing and flexibility.
Okay, well, we're not doing an RPC. We're doing a conditional use.
Just a conditional. Well, it's pretty much the same. But, okay, and I'm still concerned about the lack of sidewalks, as I think sidewalks and streetlights and things like that do make better communities. And I think also my reading on a lot of this, Jim, is that you made it sound like people in opposition or opposite, you know, to reject the whole application. I don't think there's a, from what I've been reading from opposition letters and things of that nature, I don't think it's they're opposed to development. I think they're just opposed to the density and the impact of traffic. Because when you look at Five Points, the village's Five Points, they've got a controlled traffic light. The other high-density properties you cited were permitted uses in the C1 district. And of course, you've got the church, which is in a C1 district. So this isn't an MR district. It's also environmentally sensitive. And the environmentally sensitive zone says, you know, we should it's stressed 2 units to the acre because more density is not being environmentally sensitive. So I'm probably trying to look to a way here to, if you can lessen the density, we can lessen the impact of traffic, still get the development, all that stuff. So I don't think there's, like I said, an opposition to development. So,
but I would have to disagree with what you said, though. In the environmentally sensitive development area, it doesn't say it's limited to 2. It says if you don't have central water and sewer, it should be limited to 2. But where you have central water and sewer, obviously that's where density is supposed to occur, which is also, again, the purpose of all the growth zones. The comment about people not being opposed to this development, I would also disagree with that. The opposition that I read and the comments that were made at the Planning and Zoning Commission, the people were out opposed to this development at any density. So, again, I'll just stand by what I said, that it's surrounded by MR and commercial. It's surrounded by multifamily.
It isn't a growth. No, I agree with all the growth, but when I read the most of the environmentally sensitive developing area should continue to allow 2 units per acre. The option should exist to go to 4 units per acre if the developer uses optional density bonuses, smaller lots, and some flexibility in dimensional standards, and should be allowed to use a cluster option and things like that. This wasn't referred to as using the cluster option or any of those things. It basically, it's under the conditional use. Now, I'm sure some of the clustering.
The cluster option is actually single-family lots.
Right.
Where you can reduce them in size.
Right.
But I will. You don't probably want to get into it now. I did have a discussion with Mr. Ross at the planning and zoning level about bonus density and purchasing density and things of that nature. I mentioned that we didn't choose to go that way because we have options to go. At certain locations in the county, you might have to buy the density in order to increase your density. At other locations, like this location, the increased density is totally appropriate and totally permitted by the code. And if the county ultimately wanted to receive funds from increased density, they can do that by changing their ordinance and creating some type of density fee. But right now, under the existing laws, this is what's permitted. And as I said, I won't keep repeating it, but this is the most appropriate site for increased density that I've had.
Well, I don't know about that because of the environmental concerns, because of the gut. The gut is the headwaters of pretty substantial amount of wetlands and water quality issues and all the other things that go with that. But
of course,
it does,
the village of the Five Points basically was there too.
I understand all that. I understand that.
So you got to treat people fairly and equally.
Well, I understand.
I have a friend who lived on the other side of the highway and used that slipper shell way, and she had to move because it was horribly dangerous just to try to get out. If she could make a right turn, the traffic coming off the ramp was so fast, you didn't have time to really have a good look as to whether somebody's coming or not. So, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, I understand maybe that's not in zoning law, but it's part of my decision.
I understand that, but your decision also has to be based on the evidence presented.
That's right.
We went, per the county's requirements, to DelDOT, did a traffic impact study, and received a response from them. They indicated a traffic light isn't warranted there. We're willing to pay for a traffic light there, but we can't do that without DelDOT's approval. And we couldn't do any more than we're doing.
I just wanted to let you know. I mean, she's moved out, and she was right. It's just very dangerous. You know, and so I have to say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Are there any other questions from council?
Yes. Mr. President, may I?
Certainly.
First and foremost, thank you for being here. I appreciate all of you guys for being here.
Yeah, I'm paid to be here.
I still appreciate it. You know, it's
a part I do
of the,
too.
It is part of the process, and we are, you know, we have to respect the process.
He's new. He didn't realize that.
I'm very aware. I'm very aware. So, but nonetheless, a couple of questions. To be fair, to be treated accurately, I do have a couple of questions as it relates to the bigger picture here. I mean, what we do have here on this current property is a borrow pit that has been filled in, backfilled, correct? I guess with...
In portions, not entirely.
So, and I know that you have to, abide by... I don't even know who is the regulating...
DENREC.
Okay, as it relates to that. So, and that's... That booklet over there is based on those recommendations?
The large book is the study that Environmental Alliance did for the developer.
Right.
And that was what was reviewed by DENREC, their section that deals with this. And from that, they concurred in the conclusions. And now they will issue basically a remediation plan saying, here's what you have to do exactly. And then it will be the developer's responsibility to do it.
To move forward, right. So a couple of questions, and that would be, number one is, I know the, you mentioned earlier, Roy, I've got three questions, and perhaps you can elaborate. To the rear is the railroad. Is that still active? I don't even know. Does anybody know?
Yes.
Yeah. Once a week.
It is once a week? Okay. Okay, thank you. I don't even know. But active, and then you mentioned earlier regarding a walking path. Could you elaborate a little bit on that as well?
Yeah, you're familiar with the walk with the trails down mm-hmm. from
Rails to trails.
To Lewis and, mm-hmm. and those places. The big picture plan is that would be extended through Lewis. It would come out to the railroad track, which is the Rails to Trails plan. And, again, it would run along... The southern, I guess it's whatever side. Yeah. On this side.
Of the railroad track.
And theoretically go all the way over to Georgetown. There is some planning going on to try to have some type of a park somewhere along there so anyone riding their bike or doing something would have a place to stop at and rest and, you know, maybe have some activities there, you know, passive type things to do there. It's not likely to happen in the immediate future, but I know the governor office is really behind it, and it's something that is quite feasible. And actually, you know, it's something quite doable. A bike ride from Georgetown to Lewis is, sure. is quite doable.
But that will be, I guess, parallel with the on that photo there, the southern. Oh. Part of the railroad track,
okay,
correct?
Let me mention the railroad, of course, is the railroad track, then sure. have a railroad right away. The 5 feet we're dedicating is in addition to available lands in the right of way. So it won't necessarily be a 5 foot trail, it'll be a wider trail than
sure.
that. But there's sufficient space there to locate.
And then you can see, if you would, you could see right there, that parking lot to the top right there. Yes, sir. I think you mentioned that was for the purposes of maybe folks. Elaborate a little bit more on the purpose of that parking lot.
The sole purpose of that is for the general public who would be accessing through the site to be able to park their cars to access the trail.
Oh.
Right, that's what I thought I heard.
Yep.
So, yeah,
that's the sole purpose of that. The development itself will have other places for overflow parking. It's no intention that this would be really an overflow parking lot.
Oh, they'll love that.
All right, so the... So this will provide access to the public. Now, there'll be other access points throughout the trail, but, again, this would be one in this area that would be accessible.
Not to contradict my attorney, but it does serve one other purpose. It's the oily sands happen to be in that corner, and so we had to cap those oily sands either way. So either way, there had to be some form of impervious surface put down. So when we realized where it was, it seemed appropriate to give it a dual purpose and make it also a parking lot for the trail.
Okay.
And I know you'll notify folks that there's going to be a trail back there before they would ever sign up.
Yes,
that, I know you'll do that.
Yes, we will do that. We understood there was a little problem with that at another location.
Is that referenced anywhere again in the conditions? That is going to be open to the public? Is that what you just stated? This is going to be public
access? We've represented that all along. I don't recall whether. I think it's a.
Because when you walk out of here, if it's not in here, it's not.
Let me look and see exactly what it says.
On E on page 14, uh-huh. It does not. And a parking area. It's a 5-foot easement and a parking area shown on the preliminary site plan.
But does it designate it as a public?
Shall be provided for access to the trail for the general public.
Okay, that's in there. Good. Okay, thank you.
It says also says as or shall be dedicated for use as.
Pardon?
Can that be posted somewhere?
Shall be dedicated for use as a part of the proposed Georgetown-Lewis Trail and a parking area shown.
If it said there, a little sign, future site of Georgetown.
Well, no, we'll see. I just want to make sure it says it's public so that people don't get towed or something.
All right, so there's no misunderstanding. The condition recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission says, as offered by the applicant, a 5-foot easement adjacent to the railroad right-of-way shall be dedicated for use as part of the proposed Georgetown-Lewis Trail, and a parking area, as shown on the preliminary site plan, shall be provided for access to the trail for the general public.
Right. And you go through the community to get to that parking?
You'll have
correct.
To, yes.
Correct.
How many cars?
22 parking places.
Yeah. Cars park.
Yeah.
That'll be plenty.
Okay, and then another question is earlier you had mentioned, I believe, a 30-foot piece of the roadway that is owned by the developer. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that one as it relates to privately held, because this is going to be a public road, Del Dock, correct? We'll take it over?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, let me explain that.
Please.
And I wasn't trying to be deceptive there. I was just stating a fact, okay? This is a public easement. It was accepted into the state of Delaware road system back in 1958 or something of that nature. They maintain it. Any public person can use that road at any time. Unlike most roads, this was just done as an easement. So the owner of this property actually retained a 30-foot road bed, if you would, that's part of that easement. So this owner owns that 30-foot strip subject to a public easement, and Del Dot has taken over that public easement and maintains it. So what I stated is true. It's just unusual. You don't normally see that.
There's no expectation that the developer would ever participate in any kind of upkeep, or because nobody has in the past. The state maintains all of it. In the future, with the additional development, still the state will be maintaining that road, right?
That's correct. It's a public road, and the state maintained.
So, and then community marker. Where are you looking at placing that? Okay, right to the rear.
Even though we will own that lot, but we may turn it back into a home that's part of Dutch Acres. Mm-hmm. No, not.
Is there a home there now?
It has to be either moved or demolished.
Okay.
Not enough space.
Gotcha. Okay.
And obviously, when he left the 30-foot right of way, that was prior to the state passing the law that says a minimum 50-foot right of way needs to be utilized to access the property. Otherwise, that property owner would have left a 50-foot road. Or you would have retained ownership of 50 feet of that road.
1955, right.
Any other questions from council?
No.
One last one, and I apologize. And I'm curious, and maybe it's in this, maybe it's not, but we all know that Del Dot is a big part of the conversation these days in any development in our county. And I think before the council here, with a different community, different subdivision, different applicant, it was asked, because I'm going to begin to ask these questions because I think we as a public should be aware of it. They have provided recommendations. I've already heard the comments regarding the length of the turn lanes to be there, correct? Based on this applicant's based on that. So the question is also is Del Dot requiring funds from the developer for those improvements?
The developer pays for those improvements.
Correct. So therefore, the question also...
Not some of it, all of it.
Okay, I just want to let that be known, number one. Number two is do we have certainty when DelDOT will do these improvements?
Well,
developers have got to...
That'd be done right away, soon.
DelDOT doesn't actually do them. We have to do them. We hire a private contractor that follows DelDOT regulations as far as, you know, safety and when they can do them and how they control traffic during construction. But it's actually a private contractor hired and paid for by the developer that will perform the work in accordance with what DelDOT has approved.
Okay. I think that's important for the public because I think we've had similar conversations here as it relates to funding and those questions not have been known.
And in terms of enforcing that, that is a condition of obtaining your entrance permit to get into the development. So things have to be done.
Right. Okay. I thank you for that.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
No other questions from council? If not, is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone else here in favor? Seeing none. Is there anyone here today that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone in opposition? If you don't mind, we'll start over here.